Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Badminton Podcast, a community for badminton players by badminton players, proudly brought to you by Velan. We talk all things badminton and aim to inspire you to be better in your game and in life by celebrating the people and stories of our global badminton community, whether they be past or present professional players, social players, officials or fans.
We're your hosts, Jeff and Henry, and we love badminton. From the bottom of our hearts, we'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has listened to, shared, and been part of the podcast. It wouldn't be possible without you all. If you do enjoy our episodes and can spare just a couple of dollars each month, you can really help keep the podcast going by supporting us on Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/thebadmintonpodcast. We'll leave the link in the description. The Badminton Podcast is brought to you by Velant. Henry and I founded Velant out of our own frustration with the confusing, bright, and unsightly clothes we saw in badminton all over the world. But now, it's so much bigger than that. Our mission is to simplify the badminton journey and show the world how incredible badminton is. So make sure you check out our badminton basics at velantwear.com and follow us on our socials at velantwear.
So, in this episode, we have teacher, consultant, coach, and entrepreneur, Mads Selmer, whose passion for badminton was there from the first time he entered the badminton court. In the beginning, he tried to become the best player, but later his perspective on things have changed. Now, he wants to inspire and help others to become the best. It is this mission that motivates him and gives him fuel to wake up every single day, just like today at 7 a.m. to join this podcast. Now, he has worked with beginners and professional players and found each player equally interesting to work with. And all of his passion and knowledge for badminton has led him to create an online portal called Shuttle Life, which is built on three pillars, which we'll also discuss later today.
My perspective changed when I could see that there is some other players that really wants to become world champion. And inside of me, I didn't have what it takes to take physical training and to schedule my whole life about it. I didn't have that in me. But then I began to think about being a coach. And I thought that badminton played a quite huge part of me. So I just wanted to give others to feel the same experience as I had. And I had a few players that has these diagnoses like autism and stuff like that when I was practicing or when I was coaching in another club. And I was told by the parents that this was the best times because they could totally focus on badminton and trying to make things better all of the time, which was difficult when they were going into school. So I have what it takes in me.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Mads.
Thanks.
We're really excited to have you here, and we've got lots of questions lined up because I think there's a lot that our listeners can learn from you. But let's start from the beginning with your original story, Mads Selmer. How did you get started playing badminton and when?
I think I was 7 years old and I was going on a camping trip with my mom and dad and my sisters. And then we didn't have anything to do. It was I didn't like that type of holiday that time because I was so small. We had nothing to do. And my parents found this cheap badminton set for outdoor and they had this volleyball court in the camping spot. So they gave us a racket and a shuttle and then we began to play actually outside on a volleyball court. But then I found out my dad was also playing badminton so I could go with him and disturb his old friends by asking him tons of questions while he just tried to play badminton. So I started playing, I think, maybe when I was 8 years old, but that then was when my outdoor career was started. And then I later joined the indoor courts. I think I was 9 to 10 years old. So and it just hooked me. I was this tiny little skinny kid, just tried to find what type of sports is good for me. I played a lot of football, but then they began to kind of tackle, I hope that's what it's called, each other. And yeah, you could not just have all this alone time with the football because people would eventually come and take the football from you. If they try to do that, I will fall down because, yeah, I was, as I said, this tiny little kid.
How did you go playing on the volleyball court, though? So were you using the volleyball net,
yeah,
which is much higher than the badminton net? So how did you go?
It was actually, it went around quite good because my sister and I, we didn't have any strokes to do. We could just do this basic high clear to the center of the court each time. And then sometimes the wind took it and then I threw myself in the sand and I felt very, very high skilled when doing this. So it was quite good. Yeah, we were equally bad at badminton and that's what it takes if you want a good match.
That's what it takes to have great competition, to be of equal skill level. But yeah. I think you've gotten a lot better since then, Mads. You talked about how you first got introduced to outdoor badminton when you were 8 years old, right? And then you started your indoor badminton experience when you were about 9 to 10 years old. What happened in between? What was it like that time frame in between? How come you didn't get involved sooner? What was that, just not because you just weren't exposed to it?
I think it was the last thing that I wasn't exposed to for badminton. Even though my granddad played badminton for 30, 40 years, and my dad as well, also played for 20 years, still playing actually, but I just went where all my friends, basically. But there is also another story, and that's because I was rather a bit alone when I was a child, because my little sister only got half a heart, so she was born with only 50% functionality. So of course my parents had to be a lot supporting her. And my big sister and I, yeah, we didn't feel alone, but my parents used a lot of time with my little sister. She's fine today, everything is good, but I didn't really think before I was 8 to 9 years old that anyone asked me what do you really like and what do you really want to do. So I think that could play a part in this still. That's why I might have chosen badminton on a bit later stage, some might think. The first time I started, then I kept on.
So once you decided that badminton was a sport that you enjoyed and you liked to play, how did you grow up with badminton from there? Did you follow a typical path of, say, someone playing badminton there where you would play in your club and then you'd maybe play for your club against the other clubs? And was that something that you were doing with the club training and then the competitions? What was that pathway like for you when you started to get more serious and then when you were getting a little bit older?
So yeah, I started in a club and it was a very fine club, actually. There was a great coach and I really didn't think about how good can I become and I want to be the world champion. It was a bit rough for me getting into in the school, but when I was playing badminton, I got a lot of attention and they were always telling me that it was a great job because I managed to get the shuttle over the net. I was struggling in the mathematics and other subjects. So there was not that much success when I played or when I went to school. But I found out when playing badminton, each time I get the shuttle over the net, someone was paying attention to it. So I just thought that, so I'll try to get it more over the net than ever before. And then I just hit so many shuttles over the net. So occasionally I got better opponents all of the time because I was really motivated to get some attention for my career. And then I was in my first club for 5 to 6 years. And then I went to Aarhus where I was on the same team for 5 years with many of the top players in Denmark right now. But I wasn't one of the great ones on the team. I was just playing with them and giving them a lot of sparring and support. And they also gave me a lot. Players like Anders Antonsen, Rasmus Gemke, Line, Kjærsfeldt, Astrup as well. And there was many, many great players on that team. And that's when I began to could see that, okay, things has come quite far since I started my volleyball court.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like almost as if you were playing badminton for other people, Mads. But before I dive deeper into what you're talking about just then, in terms of playing badminton for not just other people, but for yourself, what was it about badminton that you really loved or you really were enticed by that first time you actually played?
I think it was a matter of fact of being alone. It kept me equally stressed. It gave me a great amount of stress all of the time. I was probably one of the kids when, if I was playing football and there was some kind of bird flying over the football court, I would begin to look for it and probably follow it. And that just don't happen when playing badminton. And it was quite intense, and it was, there is this immediate feedback. If I hit the shuttle to Henry or Jeffrey or something, they will shoot back to me, and I can see you get this kind of feedback with the shuttle all of the time. So there's many things going on when playing one badminton. And I think that's might be the thing that get me hooked. That's
a bit of a different one, Mads, because usually we hear about people playing badminton and really enjoying badminton because of the community and being around people. But I guess when you were younger, it was something that you could be alone with and you could do by yourself and get this immediate feedback. So that's an interesting one. We haven't heard many stories about getting into and enjoying badminton from that perspective.
Of course, I love the community and I can see it, but I don't think that community is so unique for badminton. I think if you're passionate for any sports, then there will be a great community for the players and people who is passionate about it. But of course, I love the community as well, but that wasn't the things that drove me here.
So you were in Aarhus and you were training with some of the current top players like Rasmus Gemke, Anders Antonsen, Anders Rasmussen, etc. So when Henry introduced you, he said that your perspective changed about being the best player or a professional player. When did that occur and why did you decide to make the choice to potentially not go down the professional player pathway?
I was 17 to 18 years old, and then I was starting the setup around me and the other players began to become quite serious. We need to do a lot of fitness and physical training beside badminton, and I was struggling a lot with that, and then I need to get up very, very early to get all of these practices during the day. I think for 1 to 2 years I had this 9 trainings a week. Sometimes I'd practice in the morning, afternoon, and then in the evening again. I could train all of the time. I had some coaches that always was talking about when you get professional and if you want to become the best, and that wasn't never what I wanted to be. I just wanted to play badminton against some good equal opponents, but it was also quite cool to see maybe I can beat this one and this one and this player. So I didn't really play that many tournaments, but my perspective changed when I could see that there is some other players that really wants to become world champion. And inside of me, I didn't have what it takes to take physical training and to schedule my whole life about it. I didn't have that in me. But then I began to think about being a coach because someone was talking about that if I wanted to help them out in the club. And I thought that badminton played a quite huge part of me. So I just wanted to give others to feel the same experience as I had. And I had a few players that has these diagnoses like autism and stuff like that when I was practicing or when I was coaching in another club. And I was told by the parents that this was the best times during the week because they could totally shut down and just focus on badminton and trying to make things better all of the time, which was difficult when they were going in the school. So I have what it takes in me.
Yeah, it really seems like badminton for those perhaps didn't have that sense of achievement in school were able to essentially immerse themselves in the sport and feel some sense of achievement and even purpose for you, Mads, to revolve yourself around badminton. So it's really great to hear that and that it can be an avenue for those that, you know, that might not be as successful in the academic life, that they can still be successful or still get a sense of fulfillment out of something like badminton itself. So it's really great to hear that that was it for you. So it definitely doesn't sound like you had a difficult decision with choosing badminton professionally versus becoming a coach and going down that pathway. Would I be correct in saying that, Mads?
Yeah, it is. That would be correct.
And so when you were going through that decision, was it almost a split second decision for you, or was it something that required some form of guidance from, say, your coaches at the time to help you really articulate what you wanted?
That was something that someone else was asking me. And then the social life on my current team was the players I have played with for so many years in Aarhus. They began to leave the club and stop playing badminton. And then I was on the edge of also doing that myself. And then there was this guy who is still my very good friend today. He came across and asked if I wanted to participate in some Danish nationals in some other kind of league where they play some matches one of the days, and then they were partying at the night and playing matches the other day. And for me, badminton was always this. I always had to take it very serious and get the right food and all of that to participate on a high level. But this guy came across just when things were falling apart about the social things on my team. So that was the correct time for him to ask if I wanted to help them win. And we won. And yeah, we got probably a bit too much one of the evenings, but then we could play again the next day. And that was a whole new experience for me that I didn't think that. Yeah, I didn't have to quit badminton. I could just change the perspective slightly. And that's when I began to think about it. It's very important that you don't quit. You just rest and then you can continue. And I also tend to tell many of the players I coach today, not exactly that, but something like that.
You then tell them that you should go and party the night before?
No, but not before training. But if you have something to celebrate, then get it out of the system. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really good, because I think that when people stop playing competitively, then they find that there's nothing in the sport for them anymore. And they think, well, why should I be playing this? But then there are definitely other aspects of it, the social aspects and the things that you've spoken about that helps to keep people like yourself in the sport, because we definitely need to keep people like you in the sport because you provide so much value outside of your playing career. So if you look back now and you look back at the decision that you made, I know that there was a lot of things happening at the club, but would you say that if you're looking back today, would you think that you would have done a very similar thing? Or do you ever think, oh, maybe I should have played or tried a bit longer? Or do you think, no, that was right for me? I think that was a good choice.
I was this a bit introvert, little shy guy. So what I needed was someone to kind of help me with some of my questions and all of that, because my parents was using a lot of time with my little sister. So it would have to take that someone was talking with me, and that happened in the first club I was in. But then I came to this team where so many good players were playing. So, and I was just on the team, but didn't really have any conversations with my coaches. But still, I don't think that it was a drive to become a world champion. And my parents, they were never talking about me winning or something like that. They were always asking how I felt when playing. So I didn't really get angry when I lost. I was just probably because that meant I couldn't play anymore. But the result didn't really matter at all. I really like the way everything turns out right now.
It certainly sounds like you found peace with your decision. And speaking of your decision to transition from a player into a coach, and at the start, I did mention in your introduction that you did have three pillars to coaching, your coaching philosophy. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah. So three pillars that I tried to think about what I like when coaching people. I like specifically for badminton, I want them to improve in badminton. Excel in badminton is one of the pillars, but that is also just excel as a human being. You can use what you get in badminton to get further in your badminton or just in your career as a person or as a badminton player. And then, of course, I want to inspire people, some great stories and some great understanding of how you can understand different type of situation. And then I want more people to get into the sport. And these, if you go into these, they all rest on some kind of philosophies that I have taken with me from when I started to play. And then they got more detailed when I was taking my bachelor in teaching. Then I began to read. Some things might work and why some things won't. So I just want more people to like badminton.
So with these three pillars you're talking about, so improvement from a badminton level, excelling in badminton and in life as well. And the second one being?
Inspiring.
And then the third one is to increase the number of people playing badminton or share the sport with other people. So from your perspective, how are you managing to fulfill these three pillars? So from the way that you do things, and perhaps some coaches out there are listening to this episode as to how they can do things that will help them fulfill the pillars for themselves in their coaching environments.
I was hoping that you ask about that. Of course, to excel in life and excel in badminton, you need to basically, of course, you need some players, and then you need to know who you are playing or playing against or coaching to make them excel in badminton or in life, that you get to know your players. There are so many different levels of understanding and coaching your players, but I think keeping that in mind, that if you can see and understand the person who is behind the kind of badminton player, then you can really see some personal improvements or find out what it takes together to excel badminton or in life in general. That's why I try to help to inspire by making some different types of trainings with different training elements and bring in stories and giving some of the knowledge that I got with me along the way to understand situations. Also tell people that there is more about the things that they have come from. For example, I was starting playing badminton and then I got into this high level club where my understanding of badminton was practicing on this high level. And then the other guy came and told me that you could actually be partying as well and still play badminton. That changed my understanding of what badminton is. So I want to kind of unfold badminton, that you can actually have some personal preferences. If you like to party, then of course you can party and play badminton at the same time. And then I always want to make my club bigger and bigger and bigger, because that means we are more people together about our sport. I don't really like to say that we don't have enough space, because it's about badminton. And of course, we need to find some time or some course that so everyone can go and play, go and find peace and play badminton. And then I try to make this portal as well to make it easier for people to access badminton stuff on the internet. Because when I started this a few years ago, there wasn't really anything out there. But now there has been a lot more badminton coaches on YouTube. That was actually not because I wanted to be a YouTuber. That was because I was trying to help some players in Finland, also players from the Finnish national teams, because it was a huge country, so they couldn't get coaches all over the country. And then I had a girlfriend called Sophie, and we began to create exercises and share them over YouTube, so they had something to do in Finland as well. But then it just started to spread, and we could see, okay, there is actually some other people watching. There is only 5% of the Finnish people that is watching this. Then we kept on rolling, and yeah, there was just a huge market at that time. And that also began to give me motivation to see, okay, how far can we take this? So that was also a different reason than why it is. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. From what you're saying, it just seems that you are living your philosophies or your three key pillars of your coaching philosophy. I guess what we want to do is just step back a bit and unpack a few of those and go a little bit deeper, starting with excelling and getting to know your players, as you said, seeing the person behind the badminton player. A lot of times we have coaches come on and we talk about the relationship between player and coach, and actually not just teaching them what to do on the court, but actually understanding them as a person. But in terms of what you're saying is seeing the person behind the badminton player, we just want to get some more insights into that, and perhaps our listeners can as well.
Yeah, so what it takes to improve your game, it kind of also rests on some type of pillars like motivation and enjoy for the sport, and what is in it for badminton that you like so much, and how do you get that feeling? Because someone, it is for the social life that they're playing. And because the social life is so inspiring and motivational on the team, something in them just managed to practice so amazing. Maybe someday, it could be if you have boys and girls on the same team, they will always try to improve to maybe impress someone else. So to find out what really is the key factors for motivation for your players, because then you can begin to design the perfect club for these players. And that's why it is always a great discussion if you take one player out of a club and into another club, that what is it in this club that make you so good? Maybe it was because girls and boys were practicing together, or that you wasn't one of the best in the club, or you were the best in the club. Then when you go to another club, the terms have kind of changed. Now you are kind of the inspiring guy because now you're probably the best and the other players isn't practicing that hard. They don't want to play matches and you don't know really why they're coming to badminton, but someone takes them there. So to find out what inside of yourself that can bring you these great sights forward, then you can begin to search for other places that you can get this feeling, but maybe even more, or find another club that can get exactly what you want, because maybe the club you are in isn't the best one for you. So just really pay attention to what makes one player motivated. How does their life unfold in the next 2 years? And ask them, what do you want to do in 2 years? Because then you know to kind of put out the puzzles or lay down the track for the next 2 years. You need to find out where the player going and then probably unfold the possibilities. Because someone don't know they're actually a very good player. And someone is basically a beginner, but they want to be world champion in 2 years. But probably kind of, maybe we should adjust something here. Otherwise, we really have to talk about some things to make this happen. So get that sorted out with the players. And then you are able to do a great job of improve as a badminton player to understand where your players are heading.
Yeah, I think that's really important to get the bigger picture and where they want to be in other aspects of their life, not just badminton, not just as a badminton player. And just in your teaching that you're doing at the Royal Ballet School in Odense, you're teaching children in mathematics, in physics and biology. Do you find that the things that you've learned in coaching and looking at each player as a whole individual in terms of everything happening in their life, do you find that that is transferable when you're teaching your children as well in the classroom?
Not all of the time. That's because when going to the school, then you don't have any choice. Actually, you just have to go there. And then, of course, I can try to be an inspiring teacher all the time, but they would not stay at home because then I would write home and tell the parents that they wasn't here. But in the bed, I think that, okay, they just need a rest or something else. It came up, no big of a deal. But I think the difference is that they have chosen to go and play badminton and they really have no choice when it comes to school, because everyone in Denmark have to go and participate in a school. But I think the subject is second to me. I always look at my kids and look is how are they looking? Is someone sad or something like that? Because it's quite important that no one is sad. It's a very early stage on life to be sad in 5th grade. So I think that is what takes my focus. And when everyone is happy, then I can begin to learn some mathematics. And then we will talk about things, how things turns out later. But yeah, you need to get some kind of a sparkle for life if they want to learn something.
Yeah, I guess not every child is going to go into mathematics having a key motivation for wanting to do maths and you know, long division or whatever it might be that you're teaching them at the time. Whereas for badminton and seeing them on the badminton court, they're there because they want to be, you know, most of the time you'd think so. Whereas, you know, those kinds of subjects may not necessarily be the most appealing or welcoming to a young student that just probably wants to play. But if we take a reverse perspective on that, Mads, has there been anything teaching maths, physics or biology that you've been able to apply to your badminton coaching?
Yeah, that's also a great question. But I think that some of the basics of understanding how to learn in school, yeah, and then they will occasionally say that you have to listen what the teacher says and you'll have to do some kind of assignments. In that perspective, badminton is quite similar, that you'll have to not just listen to me, but also yourself. But then I will learn something about these strokes or footwork or anything. And then we are going to practice it by not by solving questions, but by trying some kind of assignments that, now you get 12 shuttles and let's see how many you can put down to the rear court in this corner by just tightening up the grip using the thumb or something like that, and then show it a couple of times, and then it's up to them. And if they don't want to do these assignments, then of course we will find out something else. We have so many courses, not everyone needs to do the same things, but everyone needs to understand why we are doing these things and why I try to help them out. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like they get a choice on what assignments to do. That's the best part of being in school, right? If you can choose your assignments, that's pretty awesome. So in terms of the badminton court, I'm certainly aligned with that. Now, Mads, we know that, as you said earlier, you essentially started a platform or a learning platform to help the Finnish national team. And now for those listeners who aren't familiar with Mads' YouTube channel, Shuttle Life, just a bit of background for everyone that's listening. I've checked this morning, actually, Mads, that you have over 33 million views, 250,000, I'm sure you know the exact number, or probably more accurate than I know, 250,000 subscribers, while releasing 1 to 2 videos full of great content per week, including, I believe, how to serve like Kevin Tsukamoto, or slice serve like Kevin Tsukamoto, somewhere in that playlist. So how do you keep coming up with new and interesting ideas?
Yeah, it's just, I have so many great people and players around me that always came up with great ideas as well. And then we just sometimes get fascinated about exercises. For example, at the newest one where I have Joachim doing some defensive shots, our focus was that to improve some kind of feeling and defense. And then we talked about it and practiced for 40 minutes. And then we came up with this exercise to get the feeling of, you know, you want to make something that you're able to do in a match. So basically the exercise have to make sense. And then we are taking it from there. Basically, I'm just trying to see what is people suggesting me to do, reading a lot of comments. And there are so many different things. And I can see that there are so many questions about basically doing the same videos again. So that's what I've been doing also many times. So you don't always have to make new videos. You just need to make the punchline much better. You just need to make the learning session better in the next video. Well, I have so many videos coming up. And yeah, I just hit 250,439 subscribers. That is the exact number. And I managed to get over this 250,000 the other day. That was quite something, because it wasn't point that it should get to this. I just wanted to give out some exercises for people to learn. But new ideas, there is just so many different things. I think it's a combination of feedback from the community and, yeah, and then what I can see is excelling on YouTube and what is relevant. For example, the Tsukamoto serve that was released exactly when they went into the quarterfinal on some kind of big tournament. And then they won the quarterfinal and the semifinal and the final. So badminton at that point when the serve was released was all about Kevin Tsukamoto and Gideon, because they just won this big tournament. So when you search for their names, my video came up. We have this quite cool picture of one of my players who is in the top article in some kind of Indonesian newspaper where Tsukamoto is, and you can learn this serve by clicking here. And then under that, you have Lindan and you have Momota and you have, but we were on top just from calling and telling how to do this little serve. That was quite cool. And that was also suggested from the community if we could do something like that.
That's really cool. So if you're looking back at all of your ideas for all of the videos that you've already released, of course, we won't get you to tell us what you haven't released yet, because we'll have to wait for that to come out. But what do you think out of everything is the best idea that you've had for the video? And then which one do you think is the worst idea that you've had?
Yeah, the best idea is obviously something like how to smash from beginner to advanced. And that's also a big little teaser for what's about to come. I just finished a video about backhand from level 1 to 100 to get you through, I think, 50 different exercises and strokes to do. But then I also did a one in March 11. Which is backhand, how you build up to improve your backhand game. That's only 1 minute long. And then, of course, there was a lot of trickshot videos, but not see, I found out what it takes to get a huge channel on YouTube, but I know how you can grab anyone's attention, and that's just by using a lot of trick shots, and then people will notice who you are and begin to follow you. And when you have an audience, you can actually begin to spread your message. But the worst idea, let's see what is. Sometimes I begin to use so much time about things. This is exactly what people want to see, and then I use so much time in producing it. Probably think the idea was quite good some of the times, but my trying to perform the idea was a disaster. Maybe about trying to begin to do something that you weren't familiar with by doing a lot of reviews and stuff like that. That's not the best idea I've taken my channels. But also beginning to make follow along workout routines was a bad idea. There was no one watching them, and it took so much time to produce, and it's not what badminton is about. That shouldn't be what is the direction of my channel. And then I also had a guy from my club who is an expert in giving betting advices, and I think that let's see if it's a good idea, but that was also not the way to go with the channel.
Yeah. It's good that you were able to get that feedback on those interesting ideas. And I'm sure you would have gotten a really nice workout trying to produce the workout video. You probably had to do the workout like 10 times just to create the video, right?
Yeah, you know, I got in quite good shape, but I had a lot of time when I'm locked down. So I could try a lot of times, but yeah, the body don't always feel like trying again for this type of things.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that you have the kind of direction that you want to have with your channel. Now, if our listeners who may have not heard of Shuttle Life before or heard of you, Mads, were, and if you were only given the opportunity to introduce one of your videos to our listeners, which video would that be and why?
I would love people to take a look at how to smash from beginner to advanced, because it somehow give people the understanding of what it takes from how exercises can get better all of the time, and you are smiling and you're having fun about badminton, and you're kind of improving and you are getting inspired of what type of exercises you can do. And there are so many comments that's also telling me that they like badminton even more. It makes their badminton practice easier, but maybe also just the newest video about backhand, 6 levels, that's only 1 minute long, to get you a feeling of what it takes from a beginner's perspective to learn backhand. And then you put on more and more and more, and then you can perform a great backhand in a matter of maybe a few weeks if you are paying attention to this model.
Okay, so what we'll do for all the listeners out there is we're going to put the link of that video, how to smash from beginner to advanced, in the podcast description. So make sure you do check that out. And Mads, I've got one final question for you about the channel and your future plans for the channel. But if you could only release one more video forever, so you can't release any other video, you can only release one more, what would you record the video about?
That is a great question. I don't think I ever would release that video. I just think I would stick with whatever I had right now. But there will be some kind of huge video about everything I've done. I would basically take all the money I've made on YouTube and hire a film crew and talk with them about how do we produce the ultimate badminton video. Because I need to get all my philosophies out. I would not just do a top 5 trick shots video.
Me and Jeff will record that video for you, the top 5 trick shots. But you can release the it sounds like the Lord of the Rings of badminton videos, the one that you want to create, that you wouldn't create actually, that it would be your last video ever.
If that I only had one more, I would go all in. Yeah, definitely would.
Just a 24-hour long video just on repeat for all the enthusiastic badminton players out there. Awesome. So that sounds really cool. And hopefully you'll never have to create that video, and that you can just keep releasing videos once or twice a week, because I think it'd be a big disappointment for the badminton community to lose you just after one more video, because you've certainly given the community so much. And I'm sure our listeners who I'm sure some of them have seen your channel, do appreciate what you do for badminton and the whole badminton community. Now, Mads, before we let you go, we do have a poll that we're running at the moment. So for every podcast guest, we are asking who their Olympic gold medalist predictions are for the 2021 Tokyo Olympics in the men's singles and women's singles event. So we'd love to get your thoughts on that one.
This could be interesting now because time of recording now is after the All England and there might not be as many votes for Kento after this. Don't know. Let's see.
I think Kento would take it. Or maybe Anders Antonsen would take it.
Okay. So if you're going to only pick one, would you say Kento?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. And in ladies singles, I would pick Marin. Yeah. Or the Korean, Han Se-young. My top pick would be Carolina Marin and Kento Momota.
So you've added on to the leaders. So we have 7 for Carolina now and 7 for Kento, and they're way ahead of everyone else. In men's singles, coming in second is Victor Axelsen at 3 votes. And in lady singles, we've got Tai Siying at 2 votes.
Mm. Wow. Well, can I change one then?
What would you change if you wanted to change?
I want the Okuhara from Japan to win in women's singles.
You want or you think?
I think.
Okay.
So I want to change it from Marin to Okuhara from Japan. And then you'll see that.
Okay.
So that puts Marin at 6 instead of 7 now. And Tai Siying and Okuhara at equal second. You've changed the scoreboard there, Mads.
Perfect.
Excellent. So we'll keep sharing our poll with our podcast guests and our listeners until the Olympics. And hopefully we'll be right as a community. Well, maybe we won't be, but who knows what surprises we might get. Now, Mads, before we go, you know, we can follow your journey on Shuttle Life. Is there anywhere else that the badminton community can connect with you?
Yeah, of course. They can always write to me on my Instagram, which is just basically my name, Mads, and then the stop, Selma. But also I have this website called Badminton Link, where you can get in touch if you want. I'm just about releasing some new coaching materials and products. So, and then in the comment section, just let me know if there's anything I can do to help you out. Then I will get back to people as soon as possible. And then I'm just very glad that I was able to get some words out with you on this podcast. That is a great way to get out with some coaching philosophies and stories and all of that. So thanks so much for having me here. You're doing a very great job in doing these podcasts. This is a very, I think, what I've tried before, this is a very professional podcast with the way things were handled also behind getting this schedule. So continue.
Great. We will. It was a pleasure to have you on, Mads, and really appreciate that feedback as well.
Thanks, Mads.
So from Henry and I at the Badminton Podcast, thanks for tuning in to this episode. If you've enjoyed it or found it useful, be sure to share it with your family, friends, teammates, and someone outside your badminton circle too, because with your help, we can show the world how incredible badminton is.
To keep up to date with new episodes and who we're interviewing next, make sure you connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at The Badminton Podcast, and on Twitter at The Badminton Pod. Feel free to contact us and ask any questions, give us feedback, or request topics for future episodes. We love hearing from you. And remember to check out and shop for your simple and minimalist badminton gear at volantwear.com. Catch you on the next episode.
Bye. Bye.